How do you feel about parole? It can be a fraught question because releasing an inmate before their sentence is complete can be considered either a reasonable act of mercy or a betrayal of justice. How parole works in practice is a mystery to most of us, but it's explored in detail in the new book, Correction: Parole, Prison, and the Possibility of Change by Ben Austin. Ben is an author, journalist, and a former editor at Harper's Magazine. He's the co-host of the podcast Some of My Best Friends Are, and his feature writing has appeared in the New York Times Magazine, GQ, Wired, and many other publications. Here he is to share five key insights from his book.
Hi, I'm Ben Austin. I'm a journalist and nonfiction writer in Chicago, and my new book is Correction: Parole, Prison, and the Possibility of Change. Correction tells the story of two men, Johnny Veal and Michael Henderson. Both have been in prison since the 1970s, for a half century, and they've been coming up for parole almost that entire time. They've been making their case to a parole board to free them. So what key insights do I have from their stories and from my reporting at parole hearings? Here are five of them. Number one, we as a country don't know why we punish. That's a crazy statement. Consider that the United States today locks up 2 million people in prisons and jails. We, a single country, lock up 25% of all the world's incarcerated people. The thing that we do more than anyone else, we don't really know why we do it. Prisons in the United States are called correctional facilities. But rather than correcting criminal behavior, they often cause more criminal behavior. They warehouse, and they do much worse. Guards, the correctional officers, they're not trained to prepare people for reentry, and they're certainly not rewarded for it. So what constitutes retribution or atonement? We don't have a clear sense. We don't know what someone who commits a serious crime must do to get a second chance. This is part of why parole boards are so fascinating, because that's exactly what they're supposed to be asking. Parole boards explore these big questions about why we punish. Does someone in prison deserve another chance? Have they done enough time? Are they remorseful, rehabilitated? In this way, parole reveals this terrible problem: our extreme over-reliance on incarceration when we don't have a valid or just reason for why we do it. But parole boards are also caught up in the same confusion. I'll give an example. Courts rule on a crime. Parole boards at the back end of the justice system are supposed to weigh everything that has happened since. But when parole boards deny someone, they usually use some variation of the same language. They say, to parole someone would deprecate the seriousness of the offense and promote disrespect for the law. But that's not a valid explanation. It's a paradox. An offense doesn't become less serious over time. A murder always remains a murder. And a crime, by its very definition, disrespects the law. You can see at parole boards how the past always dominates the present. It's like a trap. Like I said, we don't know why we punish. Number two, the second insight. People change. That's obvious, right? We all change. But in terms of crime and punishment, this is critical, or it should be. The vast majority of crimes are committed by people who are in their late teens to mid-20s. From there, people mostly age out of crime. Their brains develop. They grow up. All the evidence supports this. 9 in 10 homicides are committed by people under 35. Among the prison population as a whole, about 40% who leave are arrested again within 3 years. For people over the age of 50, though, the likelihood of another arrest is small, less than 2%. And for people 65 and older, it's near zero. The truth is, the United States could let out nearly everyone in prison over 55 and see very little change in crime. Yet, we're doing the exact opposite. Older people are the fastest growing age group in U.S. prisons. There are actually more people in prisons today over 55 than the high crime age range of 18 to 24. The sort of extreme sentences that are now commonplace treat people in prison as if they're incapable of change, as if they're the same at 35 or 65 as they were at 18. One of the guys I write about, Johnny Veal, he was locked up in 1970 at age 17. He's now 70. He created a curriculum for people like him who were growing old behind bars. Johnny said the long-timers needed a forum to work through their grief and shame, a way to convince themselves that a slow death in a cell didn't mean their lives lacked meaning or dignity. So they put together their own legacies, something they could pass on, picture albums, packets of their achievements, short autobiographies commemorating milestones. They prepare their last wills and testaments. I remember a parole board member interviewing Johnny and being amazed by this curriculum. The work Johnny was doing in prison said so much about his character. The board member offered what he meant as a lighthearted compliment. He told Johnny, "We might need you more in prison than we need you out." The third insight. We should believe in second chances, but in practice, we don't. Not too long ago at a maximum security prison in Illinois, a group of incarcerated men held a public debate. More than 20 state legislators came into the prison to attend. The topic of the debate? Giving everyone locked up in the state a chance to appear before a parole board. Illinois abolished parole in 1978, which means only people convicted before then still come up for parole consideration. On the debate team, none of them was eligible for parole. They wanted just the opportunity to prove their worthiness for release. At the end of the debate, the lawmakers gathered around the men. Many of the politicians admitted that they had no idea there wasn't parole in the state. Like you as well, maybe, they assumed a possibility of a second chance was an integral part of any justice system, really, of any society, or of any religion for that matter. Like, it's part of our values. But Illinois is not an outlier. A total of 16 states have gotten rid of parole consideration. The federal prison system ended it for anyone convicted after 1987. And every state has passed tough-on-crime laws that have excluded many crimes from the possibility of parole. So only a small fraction of their prison populations have this opportunity. Mass incarceration in America turned 50 this year. At its start in 1973, there were 200,000 people total in all state and federal prisons. 200,000. Today, there are 200,000 who are serving life without parole or mandatory sentences so long that they amount to the same thing. No second chances. I'm going to say that again. We have as many people with life or virtual life sentences today as the entire prison population in the 1970s. At the debate at the prison in Illinois, one of the guys talked about this. His name is Oscar, but everyone called him Smiley because of the way he radiates friendliness. He argued that life sentences were supposed to be reserved for the worst of the worst. He asked if 200,000 people were so irredeemable that they deserved to grow old and die in prison. Were that many human beings so abominable that they never deserved even a chance to prove otherwise? 30 years earlier, Smiley had been offered a plea deal of 11 years. When he fought his case in court and lost, he was sentenced to life without parole. Smiley asked the lawmakers there, "Was I a monster who threatened the very fabric of society, like the natural life sentence suggests?" Insight number four. Parole tells the entire story of the criminal justice system. The first time I visited a parole hearing, I was blown away. It was all storytelling. It was like a contest almost. Who could tell a more compelling narrative? You had stories of decades-old crimes, and also stories of decades spent in prison, stories of victims, and stories of rehabilitation, or even of innocence. The contest was in no way a level playing field. I could see that immediately. The stories of past crimes always started way in the lead. They felt forever present tense, and they were given more weight. As a storyteller myself, this is part of what compelled me to write this book, to make sense of this competition, and also, in a way, to enter it myself, to try to shift the narrative. But something else I saw there also hooked me. A parole consideration contains everything that comes before it. A crime, time in prison. Prison tells the story of the entire criminal justice system, including the enormity of who we punish or free, and why. In that way, parole also turns out to be a clear window onto these last 50 years of mass incarceration, and in many ways, onto the story of the United States over these years. Number 5, the last insight, at least for now. Parole is and isn't a solution to mass incarceration. Maybe that's a bit of a cheat, but here's what I mean. After doing this work, I am more convinced that parole is a needed system of second chances, a necessary release valve from prison. It should be reinstated in places where it was abolished, and eligibility should be expanded across the country. That's part of a long overdue correction to our over-reliance on imprisonment. More parole across the country would give hundreds of thousands of people in prison serving extremely long sentences a shot at being returned to useful citizenship. Those guys on the debate team at the maximum security prison, they went on to form a group called Parole Illinois, and they are pushing changes to the law to give everyone in prison in the state a shot at parole. Not to automatically let people out, just a chance to be seen and heard by a parole board. Here's the problem with parole, why it's maybe not a solution. I've sat through dozens and dozens of parole hearings. I saw moments of grace. More often, the hearings were incredibly subjective, arbitrary, prone to bias. I mean, come on, a storytelling contest cannot be justice. So expanding parole works only if those changes usher in other necessary reforms, like in prisons, creating effective educational and rehabilitation opportunities, and assurances that parole boards operate more openly and fairly. These reforms need to include better ways to heal and protect those harmed by violent crimes. And a better system won't work if those finally released from prison and under supervision continue to be set up to fail. We all should want a society that holds people accountable while still valuing their humanity and caring for those hurt by crimes. That's the goal. More parole is not the point. But parole could be a pathway to radical change and a more just country. This is Ben Austin, and these are 5 big ideas for my new book, Correction. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoy the book.
Thank you, Ben. That was 5 big ideas from Correction, Parole, Prison, and the Possibility of Change by Ben Austin. You might also like our book bite for Barred, Why the Innocent Can't Get Out of Prison by Daniel Medwed. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.